you are only as secure as your weakest link. I was just very surprised at how cyber immature people in this space are. And I'm in love.
Welcome to the Easemakers podcast, presented by Nines, for people who are passionate about the art of private service. Every estate manager has a story, and this is where you get to hear them. On this show, you'll learn from the best in the business, get tips and inspiration to fuel your career, and connect with people who get it. Subscribe now and join the conversation at easemakers.com. I'm Kristen Twyford, and today Mohammed Elsamore and I are talking with Tony Gebley, founder and CEO of Annapurna Cybersecurity. Tony found his niche helping families improve their cybersecurity after a decade running IT for the Family Office Exchange, a 30-year-old membership organization for ultra-high net worth families.
About halfway through my tenure there, I became the subject matter expert on cybersecurity and was being asked to sit in on phone calls with our members to talk about cybersecurity. And I very quickly realized that the market was being underserved. What I was seeing was that there were a number of companies trying to break into the ultra high net worth market with like software and hardware monitoring tools and saying, pay us and we'll make all of your cybersecurity problems go away, which is, not factual or possible. The challenge is that, a lot of people think that cybersecurity is a technology problem, but it's not. It's much more multifaceted than that. It involves people, processes, technologies in there for sure. But it's really not something that you can solve with, some money and a piece of software. And, that was my mantra when I was speaking to families during my time at Fox was, this problem is multifaceted and let's approach it in that way. And then we can have a comprehensive solution rather than an ad hoc solution. After a while of doing this, multiple years, in fact, I decided to leave Fox. It was a tough place to leave. I had built up a lot of systems there that I was really happy about and technical infrastructure. And stepped away and started my own firm. And it's been wonderful since.
Well, we want to start with a lightning round to help people get to know you. And you touched on this a little bit, but what's something that surprised you when you first started working with private households?
The ad hoc approach, and you'll probably hear me say this a lot, people just reading a list of best practices and applying some of them, which will make you a little bit more secure, but you are only as secure as your weakest link. And that's, another thing that I say often, but it's very true. I was just very surprised at how cyber immature people in this space are. And, I kind of made it my goal to help people increase their cybersecurity maturity.
What's a treat yourself item or ritual that you love in your own home?
It's a great question. Ritual would be sitting on my back porch. I have a patio that overlooks the Blue Ridge Mountains. I'm in Asheville, North Carolina, and you're sipping on some tea in the morning, seeing the sunrise over the mountains over there. It's great.
Like we're doing right now.
Exactly. And Tony's a tea expert. And since this is an audio only podcast, you can't tell that Tony's actually drinking tea right now. Tell us a little bit about your tea passion.
Yeah, sure. I've written 2 books on tea. I've traveled all over Asia, studying tea. And, it's a beautiful, topic and one that I could spend many lifetimes learning about. I don't like to say the word expert, but I guess compared to the average person, maybe I can be considered one. But there are people that will study a specific style of tea preparation their entire lives and not consider themselves experts. Especially around the Japanese tea ceremony or some of the handmade teas out of some of the ethnic minority villages in China. my most well-known book is called Tea: A User's Guide. And it covers 130 teas from around the world and what makes them unique. And when I'm talking tea, I'm talking like loose leaf tea from the tea plant, which is called Camellia sinensis, not like mint or chamomile. They are all great things, but they're not true tea. I'm a huge tea nerd.
We may have to do a separate podcast episode just on the tea. That's fantastic.
That's fine. I'd be happy to do that. I could speak for hours on tea. Love it.
Is there a story you love to tell from your time in the industry?
The tea industry or the cybersecurity industry?
The cybersecurity industry, the private service industry.
Yeah, for sure. I think that the one I like to tell the most is a bit of a wake up call. Every single cybersecurity speaker loves to just spout hair raising statistics and try to scare people into taking some action or buying something because of how bad it is out there. We all know it's bad out there, and I try my best to not be that person. We've all heard them. They'll just quote the Verizon study or, all these different studies on, how bad ransomware is and such. But one real thing that folks should know is that multi-factor authentication isn't what's going to save you. A lot of people will just say, oh, we put in multi-factor authentication. And that's where if you're logging your email or such, you'll get an SMS or a code, like a six-digit code, or you have to open an app and get a six-digit code. Folks think that's it. That's all they need to do at times. And I even have worked with some families that have refused to implement multi-factor authentication because they think that it's an added hurdle to accessing their data, which is frightening. But I have a real world example where an individual was sent a phishing link to a fictitious Office 365 login page. And they thought it was the real login page, and that they didn't check the URL. They didn't heed their education, and they went to that page and entered in their username and password for Office 365. On the other side of that screen was a bad actor that was receiving those credentials and entering them into the actual Office 365 portal. And when they were entered into the actual Office 365 portal, the individual received a little Microsoft Authenticator prompt. Do you want to approve or deny this login request? And having just thought that they logged into the actual Office 365 portal, what did they do? They clicked the approve button. And then the bad actor was in as that individual, and they had multi-factor authentication enabled. So, I mean, it's that easy. And that's a perfect example of, you can't really solve for that problem with technology. I mean, there are ways. They're a little bit even more cumbersome. You could use, the device as a signal in addition to the multi-factor authentication code, but this is really an area where education and having the individuals that are working for the family and even family members exercise their education on a daily basis, that's really the only way here. So I like to tell that story just to show how easily and quickly someone can social engineer their way around something that we all think is a panacea when it comes to security.
Yeah, I want to get into the heart of our conversation around cybersecurity and how these households can really focus on improving what they're doing and, making everybody a little safer. I think you just mentioned something really interesting. We all know it's bad. And so when new people come to you, new households, what do they come to you with? Do they just say, I know it's bad and we want to improve it? Or are there some common challenges that people are trying to solve? Or is there a common moment that people are like, oh, this is a wake-up call. We need to improve our cybersecurity.
I think that you could put people in a bunch of different buckets here. Some people won't act. Some families won't act until something bad happens, which is unfortunate because remediation and recovery is always more expensive than prevention. Calling an incident response shop because you've been ransomware is going to run you a very high hourly fee as they're working with you. But I think that the biggest thing that I see is just a lot of confusion and not knowing where to start. Just seeing this topic of cybersecurity, and I like to say the top cybersecurity isn't a problem; it's a solution to a problem. It's a process and set of actions that you can take to mitigate against cyber threats, which are the real problem here. But it is a confusing topic. It sure is. And what I like to do is help families understand that there is a clear path here, and I like to help them see it. And that's a lot of the work I did at Fox was just providing folks with a starting point and some next steps, and just pushing them off in the right direction. At that point, all I could do was sit on a call for an hour with a member. I couldn't actually consult. Now I'm actually doing the real work. And it's very rewarding to do that now. But when I come in, I typically see an ad hoc approach to cybersecurity. They've heard of some best practices they're doing. Maybe they're updating software on devices, or they're updating firmware on AV equipment and other things in the home. Maybe they have multi-factor authentication in place, but very few families have a comprehensive approach to this project and or this topic rather. And that's what I help folks see is that path forward.
Tony, what is that first step? The family comes to you, they're like, hey, our friends just got hacked. We don't want to be like them. What do we do now?
Yeah, the first step, and you know, it'll sound funny. So and it's because of what I do. So what I do with my company is I provide comprehensive audits of a cybersecurity posture of a family and all of their properties, including the family office, if they have one. And, you know, it might sound selfish for me to say, you know, that's where you should start is with a comprehensive third party audit. But that's why I started doing this work, because I am a firm believer in that is the best way to approach this topic. And here's why. A comprehensive audit will provide you with a list of your weak spots, and that list should be prioritized by the third party doing the audit, based on your risk appetite. And the third party auditor should provide recommendations to mitigate those highest priority risks as soon as possible and all of the other ones. But what that leaves you with is a roadmap. Like, here you go. Here's your priority list of things that you can tackle that will help you in, you know, starting at the most severe to the least severe, increase your cybersecurity maturity and your cybersecurity posture for the family. I can't even imagine another way to approach it. It's just so common sense that, you know, why would you just like go install software or have a third-party risk management program or do all these other things if you're just riddled with weak links with an ad hoc approach? Like, have a third-party auditor come in and look at everything, not just the family office, not just the business, all of your properties, and that will leave you with a comprehensive path forward. And that's what I like to provide for families.
Mm-hmm. And this is a common best practice across industries. It's not just families that need this, but I think it's so easy for a family to say, oh, we don't need that. You know, we can handle this ad hoc approach, but that's really taking a lot of risk, right?
That's right. Yeah. And the trouble here is that a lot of the audits are using what's called a cybersecurity framework. So it's a set of best practices that are usually tailored towards businesses. And it's important to find a third-party auditor that knows how to tailor those frameworks or their chosen framework to a family structure and households. You know, a cybersecurity framework that was built to protect a business isn't going to tell you how to secure all of the hardware in your AV closet, right? So, you know, it's important to find someone that has that know-how or a framework that contains those sorts of items for the family.
So clearly you're looking for different things based on whether it's a business or a family. What are the common things you're looking for across the board? Right, what are the items that stand out to you most when you do these audits?
Yeah, so I would say that a large part of it is technical, ensuring that every single device is up to date. And I've said that multiple times. Let me explain myself. Software and hardware manufacturers write code that runs their software or hardware, and those codes, that code could have bugs in it, right? And when a bug arises that allows a bad actor access to things or the ability to run their own code, that's called a vulnerability. And, you know, I'll use Microsoft for an example. So the Microsoft suite of products, you know, if you use Microsoft Office, Outlook, and all those sorts of things, Windows, every single month on the second Tuesday, they call it Patch Tuesday, they will release somewhere around 100 patches for vulnerabilities across all their systems. So someone in your organization or family, if you run Windows machines, is just one example. I mean, the same goes for Apple, iPhones, all the Android devices, even your wireless routers, Netgear, Cisco, Ubiquiti running the house. Someone needs to know about these patches and apply them. So, you know, in the case of Microsoft, if you go 3 months without patching all of your Windows systems, I mean, you could have over 100 vulnerabilities that are, you know, being utilized by bad actors in the wild. You know, so that's just one example. So I look at patch management. Is there a patch management program that the IT organization that the family's brought on is, you know, running efficiently? And I take a look at that. It's not just a, you know, a lot of managed service provider IT firms or AV companies will just do like a monthly patch cycle. Well, there's out of band patches that come, you know, outside of Patch Tuesday. Like the day after Patch Tuesday, if there's a huge vulnerability in a system, someone in the family should, or whatever organization they have doing that work, should know about it and patch it. So I look at those sorts of things, configuration of routers, firewalls, you know, all the nerdy technical stuff. I get pretty deep into that. But then I go on to the other facets of cybersecurity, like education. Is there an education program? And if there is, let's hope that household staff and family members aren't exempted from it. You know, I see a lot of times it'll be like, oh, the family office executives have to do their know before or whatever courses every month, but no one else does. And that's a huge red flag for me. It should be for everyone. All of the processes that run the business or family office or household need to be vetted as well to make sure there's no cybersecurity gaps there, and I do that. And then, you know, most importantly and often overlooked is who governs the cybersecurity program. Is there a family sponsor? Is it part of like an operational committee that the family has? Who is in charge of making sure that the cybersecurity program, and it cannot be a third party, it needs to be someone internal, someone that's ordering up that audit, someone that's overseeing that audit. Or any subsequent work that's done after the audit, and then ordering up audits when, you know, a big change occurs, like if you get a new property or if you change IT providers or AV companies, you want to re-audit all of their practices to make sure that they fit within your cybersecurity program. So governance is a huge part of it as well. But that's just a quick overview. There's also, you know, we also go into cybersecurity insurance policies, ensuring that the family has one. Part of their homeowner's policy, but also the family office may have one, like a business cybersecurity insurance policy. So there are a number of things I look into that aren't just technical, but I start with technical.
Yeah, and I think you touched on a really important point about the family and the household staff being a part of these best practices. How do you kind of get everybody on board? I can imagine that is a really hard battle in some families where some principals don't want to go through extra hoops. You mentioned like some people don't want that extra MFA login. I'm sure with some household staff, it's an uphill battle. So how do you deal with that challenge, and how do you help estate managers kind of coach everybody through that process?
Yeah. So typically when I'm done an audit, I will stay on and oversee the implementation of the recommendations that we make. And part of that implementation is often some one-on-one coaching with family members and a deep discussion of how they can help the cybersecurity posture of the family so that they don't become a weak link. And what I like to do, we all know that, you know, shoving a cybersecurity control down their throats isn't going to work, especially if they're not even open to multi-factor authentication, which is like pretty baseline. I like to offer a continuum of options, starting at do nothing all the way up to, you know, really securing things and my perfect scenario. And really in that way, anything along that continuum is better than where we're at today. And I like to explain the pros and cons and the impact on their day-to-day by doing each step along the continuum. And, you know, this is actually the most common question that I get from household staff and family office executives is, how do I get the family to comply with controls that we want to put in place? And this is my answer to it, is to provide a continuum of choices that, you know, aren't overwhelming in nature. And the number one area I see this come up is with communication. You have household staff using text messages, email that may not be organizational email. You have family members doing the same. You know, that presents risk. And, you know, my perfect scenario is that everyone's using a piece of software to communicate that is, you know, encapsulated, you know, with some cybersecurity controls that prevents, you know, people sending pictures or whatnot via text messages and other things and communicating in that way. Just centralizing communication is one of the big areas that I focus on.
You just mentioned sending texts and having emails that are personal with information that shouldn't be on it. What other red flags have you seen when conducting these audits?
Well, I touched on exempting family members and staff from education efforts. That's a red flag. Really just lack of a cybersecurity program is a red flag, or, you know, paying a company to put some monitoring software on some devices is a red flag, and that's it, right? That can't be the end of your cybersecurity program. Essentially, the output of an audit is a number of red flags, right? So, you know, and I'm looking at hundreds of things. So there could be a ton of things. Not using cybersecurity insurance at all, which is, you know, a good way to transfer some risk where there are areas you can't control. Yeah, that's really it for now.
Any other words of wisdom that you would share with estate managers or other household staff in how to influence the people around them and get the household up to speed when it comes to cybersecurity?
Yeah, I would say to establish clear goals with what you want to accomplish with a cybersecurity investment, and, you know, realize that investing proactive investments around cybersecurity are always going to be cheaper than remediation and recovery, you know, across the board. And, you know, understanding the vendor landscape is important as well. You know, taking a look at all the different providers out there that are coming at you trying to sell you things and trying to place them. And they may be useful for parts of your cybersecurity program if you're the person governing the program on behalf of the family. But, you know, just be careful and don't try to pay to make this problem go away. You know, while you can bring on someone like, you know, like us to do an audit, and we could help you put together a comprehensive cybersecurity program, which may include other vendors. You know, if you have a lot of technical infrastructure that needs a penetration test, that would be another firm that would be brought on. But, you know, while you can offload some of that burden, some of it will always be on you. And just knowing that up front is, I think, important, and just set expectations with the family on that front, knowing that, you know, someone internal needs to govern this program. We need to exercise our knowledge every single day so that cybersecurity vigilance becomes part of our culture. And knowing, you know, if something bad happens, what to do. Like, is there an incident response program? And I do look at that as part of the audit too. Like, what sorts of policies are out there and plans in case something bad happens? You know, that to me is, you know, just setting your goals and setting expectations with the family about what this investment will mean for the family, I think is super important. And then, you know, just to touch on like other two topics here, like I talk about your weak links with cybersecurity and the fact that you're only as secure as your weak link. But if your goal is to protect the family, you need to focus on personal security, physical security, and cybersecurity. Because if you're just investing in cybersecurity and not personal security or physical security, then they're your weak links in the whole, like, you know, risk management umbrella. So, I mean, and there are overlaps between these three types of security for sure. But I think that, you know, taking a long-term view of risk management in general is a very mature way to approach family safety in general, that I would often recommend. Which, you know, means a lot of things. And some people may say, well, that sounds like a lot of money to, you know, have security programs that are, you know, in all three of those areas. And it's all about the risk appetite of the family. You know, the risk appetite of the family might not be that, you know, every single thing needs to be locked up like Fort Knox. You know, you might be able to dial it back a little bit and, you know, make things still easy to access and just monitor and have, you know, appropriate logs and such. So, yeah, a holistic approach to security in general is a good idea.
Absolutely. And you mentioned text messages and personal email earlier. One thing that we talk about a lot at Nines is, like, sometimes your data walks away with a trusted staff member. When somebody leaves, what happens to that data? And so how do you deal with that problem where it's like maybe all your day-to-day stuff is really locked down and then you have a lot of turnover in a household staff or in family office? How do you deal with that challenge?
Yeah, you know, that goes back to securing communication. All of the communication between family members and staff should be either in some sort of enterprise Office 365 or Google Workspace system or a separate piece of software like Nines, for sure, just so it's in one spot. Because you're right, that data walks away, and that's a huge risk. If it walks away on bad terms, who knows where things are going to show up? And, you know, I'm sure that you can try to protect yourself with, you know, your NDA, non-disclosure agreements and such, but it can still happen, and it's a huge risk. Securing communication is always one of the most difficult areas to work with, because there's a lot of hesitancy to, you know, jump on another system or jump on Office 365 or something if they're not today. But usually I'm able to make some headway by, you know, just saying what you just said. You know, if that data walks away, or, you know, if, you know, household staff is texting photos back and forth with you know, a household manager or something, and then they walk away and they have photos of, like, now someone knows, like, where all the family sleeps and all sorts of things that, you know, go into the physical security world, which are quite scary.
Tony, is there anything else we haven't covered yet?
I don't think so. I mean, that's really, you know, my whole thing with cybersecurity is that, it seems complicated, it seems overwhelming, but starting with the third-party audit, even if you have a comprehensive cybersecurity program and think you have everything buttoned up today and think you have the best IT staff that's handling cybersecurity, you should still get a third-party audit. And that's going to show you where your weak links are, how to prioritize them. That is your path forward. It doesn't have to be stressful. I mean, that's it. I mean, it's quite simple. But yet I continue to see, you know, software and hardware and app companies out there trying to sell, you know, comprehensive cybersecurity under the veil of an app, which I think is just crazy. So, you know, just it's boring, but, like, being audited is the best way to identify your weak links. And I want to touch on one more piece here. These audits, whoever you have do them, should be against a well-known cybersecurity framework. There are a couple really famous ones. NIST, the National Institute for Standards and Technology, has one. It's called NIST CSF, Cybersecurity Framework. That's probably one of the most popular ones. There's also one called ISO, International Standards Organization 27001. You know, that tends to be for, like, large manufacturing companies. There's another one called the Center for Internet Security's Risk Assessment Method. That's the one that I use and I build upon. I think that's the best fit for a family situation. It looks into all of those soft, non-technical issues where a lot of the other ones don't. And it's actually based on, it provides prioritization automatically based on telemetry from some of the attack databases out there. So, you know, if ransomware is the number one occurring thing right now, it's going to prioritize for you all of the things that can protect you from ransomware automatically. So that's why I chose that one. And I built upon it to look into other, like, oddball areas that come up, such as, you know, cryptocurrency storage, the household situation, which isn't always inherent in these other frameworks. But, you know, what you want to do is find an auditor that uses a well-known framework. And the reason I'm saying this is because, why start from scratch? I mean, these frameworks are out there for a reason and businesses are using them. And then if you wanted to change auditors in the future, or, you know, part ways with your current auditor, then you can say, oh, we were recently audited on, you know, this cybersecurity framework. Is that the one you use? Can you use it again, et cetera, and just pick up where you left off, sort of thing. So that's just something that anybody that's ordering up this sort of service should know about. And again, like, nothing against all of these software, hardware, whatever monitoring services out there. They all probably should have a place, not all of them, but, like, some of them should have a place in your comprehensive cybersecurity program. You might need them, but they are not comprehensive in themselves. And that's just an important thing to know.
Yeah, I think that's really good advice, because I do think, like, those platforms are helpful and important. But if you have, like you said, like a Wi-Fi router that is not secure, then that undermines the software's ability to do its job. So making sure that you have all those pieces covered is super important.
Yeah, and when ordering up an audit, make sure that it includes all of your households. You know, a household that isn't part of the audit, maybe it's a vacation home, and maybe it just has consumer-grade, you know, Wi-Fi equipment and routers and access points even, that's your weak link. You know, that then, you know, you have that 10-year-old Belkin router with a default password that no one's updated the firmware for, because no one even knows you have to do that. let's get everything on, you know, enterprise quality hardware that could be managed by a third party and have a third party manage the updates for it. And then your weak link goes away, right? It's just, you know, I'm not going to say it's not that easy, right? Like, you know, I'm working with a family now that has properties all across this country and in other countries. And we're trying to figure out, okay, well, our managed service provider IT firm, you know, isn't going to fly to the Bahamas house to secure the infrastructure that we have there. So, you know, we've got to kind of piecemeal the approach, but that also provides more of a need for the audit, because now every single IT firm that manages a different property needs to be part of the audit and their practices need to be audited. Just underscores the importance for the audit, and, you know, that it goes across all properties. So that's just another thing to look for.
Well, Tony, thank you so much. This has been awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been a great conversation. Hopefully it's enlightening for some folks and, you know, gives them a path forward and reduces some confusion around this topic. And I think that if, you know, if any one person can come away with this and say like, oh, you know, like, this is what I need to do and I'm not that confused about it anymore and I can set the right expectations with the family and go with it, then I think that we've done our job here.
Thank you to Tony Gebley for joining us today. To learn more about his cybersecurity audits, visit annapurnasecurity.com.
To connect with other estate managers on a regular basis, join the conversation in the EaseMakers community.
If you enjoyed our conversation and want to hear more from experts in the private service industry, be sure to subscribe and leave us a review. Tell us about your favorite episodes and let us know what you want to learn next. The EaseMakers podcast and the EaseMakers community are presented by Nines, the first dynamic household management platform built for discerning households and the private service professionals who support them. Visit ninesliving.com to see how Nines can help you bring your house manual to life so you can live with ease.
I'm Muhammad Elzamore.
And I'm Kristen Twyford.
And we'll see you next time on the EaseMakers podcast.